Take two.
Take two in a row. That's what we'll do. Take two in a row any day of the week. We will hear at the Two Tones. It's episode 13. Tony DeBolfo, Tony Moclair. Tone, can I quote the great man Brendan Bolton? He said, and I love this, I want this to creep into our vernacular, we were statistically good today. How statistically good did you feel after the game?
I was statistically jubilant after the game, Tony, in the winner's circle. It was a lovely place to be in it, and it rounded out a magnificent weekend, did it not, with the Hall of Fame setting the tone on Friday night.
That was a great night. We saw the elevation of Serge Silvani to legend status. He gave a wonderful speech, just full of great anecdotes and self-deprecation. And then three players elevated to the Hall of Fame as well. It was a terrific night.
Yes, three players elevated to the Hall. Four, actually, if you count Jack Rout,
of course,
later an official of the club. But a magnificent night. We might address that particular evening later on, Tony,
yes.
Do you think? We should get into the business straight away.
Well, look, it was a dogged win. Nobody's ever going to accuse it of being the most beautiful or technically correct game of football. But as we talked about before we hit the record button, it was played in dreadful conditions.
Well, look, I was following the commentators through Twitter and even in the aftermath of that game, I think we've been handed a particularly raw deal by people who were watching on. I actually wondered how many of them were actually braving the elements on Sunday afternoon, because there was an awful crosswind hitting the MCG. And I think there were mitigating factors that contributed to the ugly contest, admittedly. But look, I mean, when things settled a little bit after half time, it was a pretty enthralling contest, I felt. And once again, as was the case in Perth a week before, Carlton prevailed because they hung in and hung in. And even when Essendon was threatening and I think hit the front at one point, I didn't really feel any fear, because I honestly felt that the players would come back hard as they did. And I think that's a real sign it says to me that Brendan Bolton's ethos is finding its way through to the group.
Yeah.
And let's be under no illusions. You know, we're starting again. We're starting from scratch. We lost Cripps pre-game.
Yeah.
And of course, Wiedering before half-time. And yet we still found a way. And I think that is admirable in that the players are scrapping and scraping their way to the result that everyone wants. And all power to them for hanging in these contests right through the year, really.
Well, the Wiedering incident, he went for the ball. It was a bizarre kind of incident. You don't see that too often. Got the shoulder done. He was immobile in the goal square. And given the tempo of the game at the time, or where the game was poised, he was unlikely to be bothered at that end. So rare were goals at that particular stage in the match. But then took a long time to get up. And It was a frightening moment.
It was.
He's very precious. Jakob Wiedering is a very, very precious footballer.
That's true, and I'm sure this is the last thing on his mind, but I was certainly thinking about the dreaded curse of the Rising Star Award.
Yes.
You know, when you think of what happened with Murph in his first year, getting his shoulder put out of its socket by Copeland up in Brisbane, and then you think of what happened with Camporeale the first year, you know, hot favourite, lost to Nick Holland.
Yeah, Hawthorne got a free for that, by the way.
Yes. And then, of course, Cripper, going under the Jesse Hogan last year. It's almost like it's not meant to be. However, there is light because the prognosis is that maybe it's a 2 or 3 weeker for Jakob Wiedering, and it won't be long before we see the great man back in action. And the Rising Star Award, Tony, let me tell you.
It's the most important thing, because he's a favourite of the Two Tones. We love him. I get this kind of narcotic calm anytime he goes near the ball that I haven't had since Stephen Kernaghan played.
Yes.
That one play, you just know it's going to be okay.
Yes.
If he's in the vicinity of the ball, it's going to be all right.
No, that's very true. I go back a bit further. I think of B-Dur when I see Vitrine, just for the poise and the serenity and the calm with which he plays the game. And I mean, from that practice match against Essendon, shone through. And it's amazing for a guy in his first year that he seems to have that poise and the time to make the right decision with everything that he does. And we are blessed that we've got a player of his capability at this club.
Yeah, look, I was phone in hand, ready to organise the bedside vigil with yours truly. We'd pull shifts, whatever it took, just to make sure that he was going to be okay.
Yes.
We're here 2 to 3 weeks, but the question is, Tone, would you rush him back?
Oh, no, it certainly would not. I mean, we're here for the long term, and nothing to be gained by an early recall. Let's just ensure that he gets the shoulder right, because these injuries, potentially could be hazardous. A lot of players, it really cruels careers. We've seen, seems to be the injury of the period, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The shoulder could be a really nasty little injury to incur.
Well, especially in Backman too. You look at Jammo's
well,
shoulder.
He's laboured with it for a long time.
Yeah.
We certainly don't want that to happen. And I'm sure that that Brendan Bolt and the Brains Trust will take a softly approach with players in their first year like Vitrine. We heard this week that Charlie Curnow, has come down with glandular fever.
Yeah.
We don't know how serious that is, but look, let's just give them time,
these
boys have time and
glandular
let's get
fever right. Now, but I tell you, the way we're playing, he'll have finals fever in September.
Tony, I'm trying to keep the lid on it, 2 weeks in, but go for your life.
We have obviously the physical injury to our man Jakob. You could say in a broad sense he's carrying an injury of sorts. It might be a mind injury, if I can coin a phrase. Levi Casbolt in front of goal. I want to make one observation with him. His marking was exceptional, and he's possibly the best contested mark in the club. I'm putting it out there. Tell me if I'm wrong. But obviously the conversion is terrible. He missed a set shot at goal that he should have got. And again, let's remind people that conditions were terrible. Now, instead of dropping his head, he contested the kick out and clunked the mark. He didn't. So he didn't drop his head. His rate of effort is still there, you would argue. It's just what happens when he's in front of goal.
Very true. I've got a couple of points to make about this, Tony. Thank you for raising it. I'd like to acknowledge Matthew Cruiser at the weekend too.
Great
because
game.
In difficult conditions, he was clunking marks, which he hasn't done for a little while. And I was watching the warm-up and noticing Matt Capuano lobbing some high balls to him just to work on his timing for catching the ball. And it's obviously something that they're mindful of and they're trying to get right. I'm sure the same applies with Levi Casbolt and his kicking. But just an interesting observation, Tony, that was put to me 2 years ago at the 150th celebrations of the club. I bumped into Turkey Tom Carroll, who won a Coleman Medal for Carlton way back in the early 60s, was a great full forward. And we were having this conversation about Levi Casbolt then.
Yeah.
And he said to me, he said one little thing that always worked for him, and it was so effective that he actually took it into his coaching later on, his local leagues back home, is that at training he'd set up two rows of witch's hats and he would always run between the witch's hats in kicking for goal to keep that straight line. Because if you look at Casbolt and even Cruz to an extent, they seem to be running to the right as they were approaching goal with their set shots, which is exactly where the ball was going.
Yep.
So, I'm sure that the powers that be here have tried everything to get the methodology right with Levi. It was just interesting to hear also Jason Dunstall say that for a player like Levi, who's had this flaw in his game probably from his childhood football days, the improvement you're going to get in a player like that is going to be probably minimal.
Yeah.
Whereas Mason Cox at Collingwood was the obvious alternative example, fellow that's only just recently picked up the game and has got his kicking right from day one, having not played junior footy and perhaps got into bad habits with the way he kicks. So, we hope that there is improvement in Levi's kicking. We all hope that. But it's going to be hard, and I'm sure that everyone not the least of whom is Levi himself, are working, you know, furiously to try and get that aspect of his game right.
If Levi needs inspiration, he need look no further than, let's say, Daisy Thomas, who was roundly put upon by a lot of supporters. I'm going to admit I had my doubts, obviously. Probably the best game I think he's ever played for Carlton.
Well, no
that,
doubt.
That first goal was just unbelievable.
It was a thread of the needle, you know, in difficult conditions, which was a real lifter for the team. And it's a fair point you make, Tony. Look, he played well in Perth last week. I had him amongst the votes last week. He was outstanding. He's obviously benefited from a full pre-season. Mm. The one thing that just disturbs me a little bit is that we hear some Carlton supporters turn on their own during the course of the game. Now, whatever you think of the merits of the Thomas deal, it's not Dale Thomas's fault. Mm. Dale Thomas is here because the Carlton Football Club wanted him here. So I just would love to see supporters actually support and not use him as a whipping boy for the ills that may befall the club. But all power to him. He's playing well, and let's see him back it up this week, because he's a smart player. He's canny. He knows where the goals are, and, gee, do we need goals. We need goals from all of them, but he's the one that seems to find them.
Well, not only that, I mean, number one, he seems to be enjoying his football, which is a really, I think, important point. And number two, when the pressure was on in the second half, he stepped up. And he was, you know, mentioned by Bolts as that, I guess, the firm of leaders in the club. He is ensconced there in terms of the leadership group, if you like, as one of the cooler heads, one of the more experienced players. And he was terrific in that second half.
That's very true. And I think what the coach has done is, made it clear in terms of the expectations of each of our players, but particularly the experienced guys, setting the tone and, pardon the pun, and really contributing at probably crucial moments in the game. In particular, you know, where we wanted a deft kick or a clever handball, you know, you had fellows like Thomas, Gibbs, Murphy executing it with precision. You know, another one was Matty Wright. You know, he fluffed that goal. I think it was the third quarter, wasn't it? Mm. And then butted up with a great goal to, you know, really give us the ascendancy. And he's a smart player.
Game? Did I get that right?
100th game. Yeah. You know, these are wise heads that have seen a bit of footy and just had this knack of doing the right thing at the right time to help get their team over the line. And it's great to see some smart footy.
Well, just want to welcome the return of Dennis Armfield as well.
Yes.
Looking and very sharp.
Well, when Jakob Vietering went off in pain in that second quarter, Dennis emerged from the dugout and probably should have snagged two goals with free kicks for running down a couple of Essendon players. It was great play. Kicked that great goal later on in proceedings. So, and really gave the team a lift at a probably pretty pivotal time where we needed one, you know. And all power to Dennis. He's a great character of Carlton and plays with his heart on his sleeve and became a life member of the club last year and truly values it. And that's what you want to see in your players.
Is there room in the sleeve with all those tats, I wonder? But anyway, it is
not
great.
The greatest artwork, Tone, I'll have to admit. But,
he saves his artfulness for, in front of goal. And he did
very true.
The weekend. It was great to see him back. He's still got that pace. He's one of the quickest players at the club.
Yes, yes.
And like you mentioned that, that doggedness, it was there for four quarters. At times it wasn't pretty, but 4 points next to your name on the AFL ladder, that's more beautiful than anything.
I couldn't have put a bit of myself, Tane, and I think what we love to see in this team and what we are seeing is honesty. You know, we're seeing honesty of performance and fellows that are giving their all for 100 minutes. Mm. I think it was a feature of the Fremantle game, and I think we got it again. You know, by and large, we're playing games out now, and that's holding us in such good stead. You know, we did it, as I said, with our Crips. It was when I, you know, heard that coming to the ground, my jaw dropped.
Yeah.
And yet they still found a way, and that's strength in numbers, isn't it? That there's no heavy reliance on any one particular player. It's one in all in, and the players, to their credit, found a way.
Now, Cripper will be right for next week against Collingwood. Before we get to discussing that game, Tone, I'm going to get you to give me your votes for the game.
Yes, and it was particularly hard. We had this conversation off air, Tone, didn't we? I mean, with honourable mentions to Murph, Kieran Byrne, who is going to be a player,
yes, he Brendan was terrific.
Bolton pointed out. Andrew Phillips, that big goal in the last quarter that probably sealed it for us. There were so many good players. However, I have gone with one vote to Bryce Gibbs, heady player, did some great things at pivotal moments in the game, really stood up for the club. Number two, two votes to another old head, Cade Simpson. He's in rare form and is just holding the back line together at the moment.
Game 248, if you don't mind.
Brilliant work from Simo and all power to him. And three, I had to give it to Dale Thomas. I just thought in a game crueled by the conditions, he was a bloke that, you know, just made the right decision over and over again, and I think his skill and headiness around goal is exactly what we need at the moment, and good luck to him. May it continue for Carlton.
It was fantastic stuff. I'm going to go, what did I have here? I had one for Cruiser.
Yes.
Because it was just great to see him play himself back into form. Yes. I like that. It was a confident game or a confidence-building game for him. I'm going to go – I know this is going to turn things on its head here, but I'm going to go two for Daisy and three for Simo. I just think Simo's phenomenal in what he brings from the back line, repelling forward incursions from the opposition. He's just – and he just shows the back line how it is to be done. And you know, the back line has been mentioned continuously and probably the greatest improver of any – I guess, team group at Carlton at the moment. They keep getting mentioned in press conferences and that sort of thing. I just think he is the general down there. He's just doing amazing things.
Great call, Tony. Couldn't argue with those votes. And Simo, you know, the little big man of the Carlton Football Club. And what amazes me that he has strung 248 games together, the way he has played, because it's body on the line stuff. He's not a big man and yet, you know, he dances with giants and... and he's still going strong. And, will we see him get to the big 300? It'd be lovely to see, wouldn't it?
That's a delicious prospect. And we certainly hope we're still discussing the great performances of Cade Simpson next year on the Two Tones. Now, Tone, Collingwood.
Yes. The Black and Whites. Well, they're off, a fairly substantial fade-out against West Coast, aren't they? And, look, it's great to, you know, to front up again to the MCG this week. We certainly hope there's more than 44,000 people there this week, Tone. I mean, come on, this is the clash of the Titans. You know, they talk about, you know, the derby and, you know, the showdown in Adelaide. I mean, please, you know, if you're talking about rivalries, this is Arlie Frazier stuff.
And there's going to be more in this than maybe there has been in previous years. Well, I mean, you look at last year and the Jock McHale game, which was a terrible game. But they're more evenly matched. The teams, I would argue, are more evenly matched this time around.
Well, they are. You know, and I just think with every game comes a new test. And in Collingwood, there is no greater test. You know... I'm just looking forward to seeing the traditional rivals out there again, the MCG this week, Tony. There's something special about these. And, you know, we don't tend to celebrate derbies in Melbourne, but when you think about it, Carlton and Collingwood are separated only by the length of Elgin Street. And you probably wouldn't get a better rivalry in any cone in the country. So, you know, let's just hope that that the supporters... can see what is happening under Brenton Bolton and lend their support to the team, because we can see now that the players in this team are working for each other and it is strength in numbers, and let's see that translate to the stands.
Well, just to bring you, I guess, to just add a point onto what you just said, Friday night, it was Scott Camporelli who mentioned that he thanked everybody, and he looked up at the upper stand. And he said, I want to thank the fans as well. And so this is, I mean, I just had this, realisation that you think the players are out there doing it for the team. There is another team member out there called supporters, and that is equally important, you would say.
A fair point. And we had this chat with Ian Robertson as well. You know, the speech of Robbo's did tend to meander somewhat. But there was a great point he did make when he was asked the question of a fellow that had played in the 68, 70 and 72 premierships. And the 70 and 72 premierships, the grand finals are famous. You know, the Collingwood game we all know about in 1970. But... Robbo mentioned, of all those premierships he played in, how the 68 grand final was the one that stood out for him because of the pleasure that it brought to the Carlton people, the members and supporters, who had had to withstand a 21-year premiership drought between 47 and 68. So to see what it meant to the people was probably why Ian Robinson pitched for 68 ahead of those other great triumphs of 70 and 72.
Which,
and
as you said, Tone, is a hell of a lot to have played in 1970, Teddy Hopkins, you know, 44 points down, all that sort of thing.
Very true. And yeah, we're seeing that this very day, aren't we, Tony, in England with Leicester and Ranieri's impact on the people of the city. And what a magnificent story that is.
Well, I hope... not unparalleled in sport, as Mark Murphy and Brendan Bolton together hold up the 2016 Premiership Cup.
Wouldn't that be beautiful? And they wear blue too, don't they, the Foxes? I think Leicester are blue.
Well, they do. It's a sign. Yeah, it's a sign. What are we? Are we currently out to 5,000?
I'm clinging on to anything, Tone.
Okay. You'll take the portents where you will. Collingwood versus Carlton. It's their home game. Saturday, May the 7th. At the MCG, 1:45 p.m. And if I've got my history right, Tone, May the 7th was VE Day.
Oh, is that
the
so?
End of World War II in Europe.
Is that so?
With the demolition of the Allies' traditional rivals, the Nazis.
who wear the colours of red and black, if memory serves, Tone.
It's true. And just as evil. So get on down there, support the club. Now, any final thoughts on Friday night? As you said, there had been a couple of references. It was a great thing. It was at the Athenaeum Theatre. It was accessible. It was affordable to members to come on down, supporters. Scott Camporelli, as we said, gave a great speech. It was a terrific night.
We have to be fair to the others that were party to this. John Rout talking about his father Jack.
Terrific.
How he mentioned that Jack valued the people of Carlton higher than the premierships or any successes that the club actually earned. That was the people that mattered most. It was lovely to hear him say that. And of course, the legend Tony, CJ Silvani. As you said earlier, it was in rare form, self-deprecating humour throughout. Probably the highlight was after he gave his speech, how he walked to centre stage and visually showed how the two knee reconstructions had actually straightened his bandy legs. And he was now, that it added an inch or two to his height, so that he now had Big Nick covered in terms of his ideal playing height. So I think that was just magnificent from Serge. He would have been the last bloke wanting to get up there. But he was tremendous in his acceptance speech. And I think when we look back on all those past players and officials that were on it, what we saw in common with each of them was the love that they had for their club and how, after all these years, you know, that it still burns, strongly for them, and it was a privilege and a pleasure to be there, wasn't it?
And you know, definitely too with Scott Camporelli, given how he exited the club, and there was a little rancor there, let's be honest, at the time. All is forgiven. He mentioned how much the club meant to him and how important it was in his development as a person.
It wasn't magnificent to see his twin boys in tow there, too, Tone.
Thank you. We've just heard the news of Rebecca Judd too that night.
Well, we did. I saw Stephen Silvani loitering around the foyer of the Athenaeum with a couple of contracts and a pen, trying to get these two over the line. So, no, I think we're in good hands there. And, yes, it's rather exciting that potentially we could have a couple more Camporellis going around for the Mighty Blues.
I certainly hope so. Now, before we go wrap up on the two tones, I just want to mention today we're a bit like the old lotto draw. We have two... people sitting in, making sure that everything's above board. They are Jack and Robert, two students of Marcelin College, speaking of the Silvanis.
Yes, Stephen is an old Marcelin boy because Serge is a Paradian. Let's just get that cleared up.
Oh, really?
Okay. And Jack is an old Zaverian. So there you go. They spread the love, the Silvanis. But it was lovely to see Robert and Jack in the room, Tone. I don't know what they'll make of this nonsense, but it's lovely that they're here and digesting it all. And it's terrific that the club is opening up its doors to expose and immerse our students with all things Carlton. It's a good thing, isn't it?
And they are, I believe, in year 10, is that right, boys?
Yeah.
And rusted on Carlton supporters. That is the most important thing. Yeah, it's been a torrid 10 years.
And Jack, what did Jack say earlier about why he stuck with Carlton? Jack, a quick comment from
Jack's
you.
Jack's going to tell us now. Come on, Jack.
It's wrong to change clubs and go stick with them the whole time.
You've got to stick fat. I love it.
And that is emphatic from Jack. It's lovely to hear that tone. It makes me shed a tear.
And just before we go, Robert, you've stuck with Carlton despite your surname being... Thank you very much. Take that, the family club. This has been the Two Tones. We will catch you next week, where hopefully we are discussing the three people.